You're listening to OU Podcasts.
Hey guys, welcome to Operation Ultra Podcast episode 12. I'm Dustin.
And this is Rachel.
And we're back home. We're back in Hot Springs, Arkansas again this week after spending a nice long 2 weeks in Charleston, South Carolina for my work. And in the whole trip, we didn't get to really do any trail running, but we got to drive through some great areas and see some spots that would be nice to go back and trail run, including driving through the area where the Lake Martin 100 was held, if you recall our previous interview with the Lake Martin 100 race director. And Rachel, what was the weather like that time when they would have had the race?
Well, it looks like it was probably a little bit like it was the previous year. It looked like they probably had some rain and maybe some mild storms, but I'm hoping they got a little sun in there as well.
Yeah, and if I saw correctly, I believe out of 48 starters in the 100 miler, there were nine or 10 finishers. So it sounds like it was a pretty bad day, and we look forward to hearing about how the race went. You know, some of those epic races like that, or races in epic conditions, or make for the best stories. And in the spirit of visiting new places, this week we get to hear from some folks who are starting a new trail racing group based out of Knoxville, Tennessee.
Sure, it's the guys behind Peak Mountain Sports who are working towards changing the face of trail running in eastern Tennessee. So with that, let's head over and start our interview.
Okay, we're here now with Brad Spears, nice last name, Brad, and Luke Cervedio. Brad and Luke together founded Peak Mountain Sports out of Knoxville. So real quick, guys, tell us a little bit about Peak Mountain Sports.
The idea kind of first came to us, or to me specifically, in October or maybe September of last year. You know, Luke and I, we both come from a pretty intense cycling background. And we kind of both gotten away from that a little bit over the past year or so. And, you know, I really wanted to get the same team-type atmosphere, the same kind of experience that we had, each had, on multiple cycling teams in the past. And I really wanted to get that in a trail running team. I'd seen the growth of trail running over the past few years, and it seemed like it would be a good fit. And so it was shortly after kind of the idea came to me on one early morning, and I told Luke about this later. I woke up one morning at 3 o'clock and couldn't sleep, and immediately Peak Mountain Sports kind of came to me, and I went out and bought the domain name and set up a Facebook page with no content, just because I knew that's what I wanted this thing, whatever it became, to be called. And so it was shortly after that, Luke and I, we drove up to the Smoky Mountains and actually got on the Rainbow Falls Trail, I think, to run up to Top of Laconte. And on the way up there, I kind of laid out my dream, if you will, of what I thought I wanted to do and what I wanted him to join me in doing. And so that's kind of the roots of all how it all went down. Shortly after that, we assembled a group of hooligans here in Knoxville that were all kind of big people in the trail running scene, and we got them kind of into the idea and the concept, and just in a matter of 4 or 5 months, we've kind of assembled a team, and we're racing together and traveling together, and so far it's going great.
So how did you two partner up, and how did you get from the cycling world to the trail?
So Brad and I have kind of been racing together for, I don't know how long, 10 years probably. For most of that time, we've been on the same team. You know, I was originally, when we first started racing together, I was in Nashville, and I moved over here, I think, 2008. And, you know, just being teammates and living in the same city, we tend to see a lot of each other, and a lot of that time ends up being on, or it ended up being on the bike, strong relationships are forged over those type of extended training periods and things like that. So, in the off season, both Brad and I kind of started doing some cross training and running. You know, it was one of those things that we ended up doing, and so we just were doing that together a fair amount, and had both kind of expressed interest in potentially finding something else to do other than cycling, since we'd both been doing it for quite a long time. And so, you know, trail running just was one of those things that we were talking about, and it became, you know, the idea we were both going to leave cycling, not really together necessarily, but that's just how it happened. And so, yeah, once that happened, we both kind of threw ourselves headlong into the trail scene, and, I got an email, I think at 8 o'clock in the morning, one morning, and Brad had a domain name and, you know, a whole host of other things. And the email just said, "Hey, trust me." And so I was like, okay, so that's kind of how it happened.
Yeah. And, you know, trail running is funny for years, because I think we probably started, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, trail running became kind of like this little affair we would have outside of our cycling network. You know, it's something that we would look forward to towards the end of the cycling season in August. We would already be talking about, you know, what trails we want to go run and how much trail running we would do over the off season. So it was always this thing that we just couldn't wait to get started doing. And it was like, silly, why aren't we doing it more if we love it this much and look forward to it this much?
You know, most runners we know will cycle or have a road bike, or at least a lot of runners we know, but not many runners that I've run with do any cycling races. So what kind of cycling races did you guys come from? Was it mountain biking or all road?
My background actually in the late 90s was mountain biking. That was mountain biking's heyday, I think, although it's had a resurgence. There was, you know, kind of this big, they called it the NORBA, that was the governing body at the time, big calendar, and we would travel all over the U.S. doing this NORBA series in the late 90s. And then shortly thereafter, I guess, in 97, I actually got a scholarship to go to school to race my mountain bike, which at that time there were only, I think, 3 universities in the U.S. that were given true scholarships to race your mountain bike or race your bike. So I was fortunate enough to be able to do that. And then at school is where I got exposed to all kinds of bike racing, cyclocross, mountain biking, road biking, and that's kind of when the Lance Armstrong shift occurred, and, you know, the growth of road cycling just exploded, and that shortly shifted to primarily road, although I still do some mountain biking stuff just for fun. So, yeah, I ended up racing road for 14 years or so shortly after that. So, and that's in a nutshell my kind of background. Luke's is a little bit different for sure.
Yeah, so I actually kind of started as a runner, you know, I was kind of running probably, you know, as soon as I could walk. My parents would probably tell you I was running, but I ran competitively through high school and into college. I got injured, midway through my freshman year in college. I guess the increased intensity, mileage. My body just didn't react well to it, I suppose. So trying to figure out what to do, I got in a triathlon, and that was kind of my first exposure to cycling competitively. And that's really where it took off. I found out that, you know, as good of a runner as I was at least as good of a cyclist. And so I started kind of getting interested in road cycling, and that's really where I stayed. I've never raced a mountain bike, even though I own one. So yeah, I mean, anything that has to do with road racing, time trials and, criteriums and also some cyclocross as well, but primarily for me, it's been road racing.
To me, I look at cycling, and cycling is what I'll call a capital intensive sport. And you go to running, and running is really a pair of shoes. I mean, it's fairly minimal in comparison.
It's fantastic.
you're hitting the nail on the head here. The transition has been really interesting, and capital investment from a time and financial standpoint, both. But, you know, I am blessed with a young child now, and he was very much the catalyst, as much as, you know, I can say about this love affair and us really loving trail running. He was very much the catalyst for me needing to make this decision. As a cyclist, a good training week is 16 to 18 hours. You know, that's a solid training. Well, as a runner, you know, 16 to 18 hours is a little too much. You know, 8 hours a week or 9 hours a week gets you a solid week as a runner sometimes. And the travel, you know, there's more running races all over the place. And for bike racing, we were having to travel a lot. And so time management and the time investment, the transition's been great. That's for me, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, same for me. I'm a PhD candidate, so I have very little time and no money. So yeah, you know, just being able to have a throw a pair of sneakers and a pair of shorts in my bag and get out the door whenever I have a second, you know, it's been fantastic. You just can't do that as a cyclist.
And you guys are in the Knoxville area, and I'm assuming you have lots of good trails close by. Tell us a little bit about the trail scene in Knoxville.
Oh, it's fantastic, and that's what we love to talk about most. I'll certainly get started on the trail system that's close to my heart because it's close to my front door. Just 1.5 miles from my house, we have what's called Hall Ridge Park, and it's 35-mile, 780-acre park system of some really technical running. I mean, rocks and roots and steep hills, and it's kind of surrounded by a body of water. It's a great, great place. It's getting a lot of attention, a lot of momentum. It's got a lot of great recent momentum. There's a crew out building some amazing features on some of the trails for mountain bikers. But so that's where I probably train the most. Luke's a different story. He's on the other side of town.
Yeah. So for us, for me on the east side of town, it's the Knoxville Urban Wilderness. It's actually just across the river on the south side of town. It's kind of affectionately known as the Dirty South. I don't know exactly how many miles offhand. There's always new trails being built out there. There is an enormous amount of momentum just from the grassroots level to police and continue to sustain the existing trail system. Knoxville is, you know, I would say probably like a second-tier town, nationally speaking, when you think about outdoor destinations. You know, in this area, people automatically kind of think of Asheville and Chattanooga. But, you know, I have friends in both of those towns, friends who are on the trail scene there, you know, and there are probably onesies and twosies literally out there that are maintaining those trails. Whereas here, when you go out for a trail day, you know, in the South specifically, the Appalachian Mountain Bike Club, really, they've been kind of the group who is pulled everybody together to continue to maintain these trails. And it's, you easily see 30, 40 people out there on a Saturday digging and moving dirt around out there, and local cycling shops will kind of provide lunch for the group. So, I mean, there's a really pretty big movement out here, and the trail system that's out there is just phenomenal. I mean, if you want to stay flat, you can stay flat. There's a ton of climbing out there, and it's, you know, most days, you know, it's just an outstanding place to run. You know, but it's tough running. It does take its toll on your body. You know, I follow some trail runners, you know, who are running out west in Utah and California, in the Bay Area, and those type areas. And I see the pictures of the trails that they're running, and they're these like beautifully manicured trails. You know, and I'm jealous sometimes because it kind of looks like they're just running on like soft, loamy dirt. Where for us, it's really tough stuff. It's pretty lucky though to have these resources right outside our front door.
Well, for those who don't know, where is Knoxville?
Well, it's considered East Tennessee. We're pretty much right at the doorstep of the Smoky Mountains or Smoky Mountain National Park. I think we're like 45 minutes from. Yeah. It took us maybe an hour to get to.
We're about 45 minutes from the park, and so we're located about an hour and a half. I know a lot of your followers probably do a lot of the Rock Creek stuff in Chattanooga. So we're an hour and a half northeast of Chattanooga. The North Carolina, you know, line is again maybe 45 minutes away from us. Lots of big mountains in that direction. you can easily get up, a 5,000 or, well, I guess 3,500 to 4,000 foot peak in several of those areas. So with great trails to take you up to them. So we've got mountains, but we also have a decent amount of valleys, and just, as Luke said, some flat running as well.
Part of your initiative is to get people involved in the trail. So you do have a free winter series that you guys put on. Where does that take place, and when does that kick off?
So we kind of had the idea to put a free series together, just as kind of a community energizing type of event, and we did. We wanted to spread it around, so we had events both at in South Knoxville in the urban wilderness, as well as in Hall Ridge, and so we were a little concerned about having people travel, but it turned out to not be an issue at all. People are just kind of really receptive and excited to get out for an opportunity to kind of compete.
Yeah, and they're free, and the idea is, provide something for everyone and maybe take up donations and let those donations, just 100% of whatever's collected, go directly back into the park system that we're hosting the event. And so that's what we've done. And I think next year, weather, it's always going to be an issue in the winter. We learned that the hard way this year. We're not fortunate enough to have good weather at any of the three races, but that's okay. It's a free race, and it's kind of low key and grassroots. And we were still able to raise some money that went back into the American Mountain Bike Club that does a lot of work at the Dirty South, as I call it, the urban wilderness. And then also the Hall Trail Crew, which is doing a lot of work at Hall Ridge. So it's a win-win for everybody. And it's something we're definitely, it's kind of our roots. That was kind of the first thing that we invested our time and invested our money in. And it's something I think is going to stay, and we're going to do it for as long as we can every year. And if it grows, great. And if it stays kind of small, then that's fantastic too.
Yeah, I think, which one was it? Was it the second event that we had? I think it was on the starting line. It was, I want to say it was 39 degrees and raining. And it just got worse through the rest of the event. the longer people were out on the trail, the worse it got.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
I was impressed that people made it out for that, honestly. I really was. Those were tough conditions.
Well, I think some folks use that as a badge of honor and like to run in those conditions just to say they did.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that's a model that's been used pretty extensively in Arkansas, where we're from. The Arkansas Ultra Runner Association, or Ultra Running Association, they put on a number of free races throughout the year, and participation is pretty strong. Anywhere from, they might have 20 some odd runners at the smaller races to 100 or more at the larger races. But really what I think it does is highlights the community focus that you guys talked about.
Yeah, and it's great. We end up finding that people are coming out and staying around for hours after the race, and that, and we were all together, and no one really wanted to leave, and it kind of did pull us in together as a community, and I really think next year it's going to be even bigger, and it's going to hopefully bring more people into the community. And we did have, I know on one race, we had a couple of first timers that had never actually done a trail run, and came away from the experience asking me about what kind of trail shoes they should get, because they did it in like some, regular road shoes. And so it's great that just a small victory there in the very first event that we had, which, maybe 11 or 12 people showed up, and one of them was a brand new runner that had just heard about it. So, yeah, it was fantastic, and it's something we're going to stick with.
One of the things it also allowed us to do was kind of have a bit of a testing ground for some of the things that we wanted to put into practice later on for more sanctioned legitimate races that we were, thinking about putting on later on in the year. And so I guess, it allowed us to kind of test the model, so to speak. And I think we both came away from that feeling as though, it was more than doable, the things that we wanted to accomplish. Aside from the fact that we both you know, we're kind of staring at each other throughout the course of these events, just saying like, yes, this is like, this just feels right. So, I mean, it was really kind of, just positive all around.
And in addition to the Winter Series, you guys have the Rock and Route 30K in September. That's September 6th this year. And registration is open for that. Tell us a little bit about the Rock and Route and what people could expect there.
So we are super excited about it. And in fact, it's almost obsessively so. We're really, really excited about the event. Again, it's going to be at Hall Ridge, which is technically in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, but it's maybe 4 miles from Knoxville. So that's the location, Oak Ridge and Hall Ridge. It's a 30K event, two laps, so two 9.2-mile laps are going to be the course. It'll have, you know, we kind of struggled about which particular route to choose, and we finally chose a lap that is it's got some fast sections, it's got some wide sections, but it's got some really technical terrain. There is the name Rock and Route literally comes from, we wanted a name to kind of symbolize what the runner should expect, and there are plenty of rocks and plenty of roots on this course. There is a hill that here locally is affectionately called the Hill of Truth, and it's just an old power line cut. It's ugly, it's raw, it's rough. But it's steep and it's got three or four tiers, and that's kind of towards the end of each lap. The runner's going to be faced with that, which is in its own way just like it, to me, it's pretty, even though it's so rough and raw with power lines kind of going over it. But the remainder of the course, you're literally beside water the whole time, and so you're kind of running the outskirts of the park area that's covered by water. So water is to your right side, I would say 60% of the course. You'll be running alongside water, which is going to be really nice. We're trying to make the event, a festival-type atmosphere. We've already got some sponsors on board that are going to be bringing some neat things to the event. And we encourage runners to stick around afterwards. We kind of want this to be, as much as we want it to be a really good race, we also want it to be something that's just what people do every year, you know, like, oh, in September, I'm going to the Rock and Route. Whether you're racing or not, I'm going because it's a great place to hang out. Everybody's going to be there together and bringing in people from different communities. Like, I know there'll be a lot of people from the mountain bike community there just because they love Hall Ridge and they like to get together and have a good time alongside everyone else. And so that's kind of the general atmosphere that we hope to kind of make out of the race. I don't know, Luke, if you want to talk some about what we want to do from a mission standpoint of the race.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the other things that's important to us is to be, for lack of a better term, just kind of conscious of the decisions that we're making in terms of being environmentally responsible. I think we've all kind of been to races where, at the finish line, there's three pallets of plastic bottles and they're handing every finisher, a bottle of water when, everybody goes to the race with a bottle of water, their own bottle. And so it really kind of, it just strikes me as an unnecessary type of stress to put on the environment when it's just not needed. And so, to that end, we've kind of tried to really make some difficult decisions in terms of how we want the race to be run logistically. It's been challenging in some aspects, I think in the end it's the way we want to go, and it's been something that we've been really vocal about from the beginning, starting with the pre-series that we really put on in the winter. And I think honestly it's had ripple effects. I know we're not the only guys that are out there doing it. But I do know that there are some races that occur in the area who this year already have already implemented that same type of the same type of kind of thought process that go into the race logistically. And whether or not that has anything to do with us, who's to say? But I think, if we can have that type of impact on the community, that's really what we're after, I'd say, more than anything else. So, in terms of just being as trash neutral as we possibly can be It's something that we're really striving to do for this race as well.
In your race series, your winter race series, you're doing the Cup Free racing as well. Has that been, I guess, accepted pretty well by the participants?
Yeah, it has been. Of course, with the winter race series, the races were fairly short. But yeah, it was accepted, and everybody seemed to understand. And you see it, there's a local series as well called the the Knoxville Track Club, which is a huge track club, I think 2,000 members probably. They have a, probably 11 race series. There's one a month almost all year long, all trail races. A lot of them are longer. And, you know, they kind of stick to the same concept as well. Some of the longer stuff, they may have had cups, I'm not for sure. But it seems to be, and I know Rock Creek's doing it there in Chattanooga, it seems to be something that's growing. And so people almost, they don't quite expect it, but it's not kind of this absurd thing to ask of people to carry their own hydration. It's not to say we won't have feed zones throughout the course. We'll certainly have feed zones there, and it's just maybe people are filling up their own bottle, or maybe there's someone to pass them a reusable bottle in the feed zone. Where the struggle has come in some areas is from a sponsor standpoint. It really does. This was something we had to learn together. It really does limit a lot of your sponsorships. We've already kind of had to tell one or two potential sponsors of the event that what they were offering us, and we don't have any money and we don't have a ton of stuff for to turn away a sponsor. It's really hard to do, but when it pushes the bounds of your comfort level or what the mission and the message that you're trying to send, that's where it gets a little bit hard. So if a sponsor happens to offer, plastic bags that, to give to all the runners, I mean, I'm very thankful and grateful for the generosity of that sponsor. But, in that circumstance, that doesn't kind of fit in with what our goal of the race is. And so we didn't want to compromise our mission at the expense of, kind of just accepting something from our sponsors. So fortunately, in that case, we were able to work something out. And in both cases, we have been. But it does put additional stress on us from a promotion standpoint of having to consider that when we solicit sponsors. But in the same light, we're also soliciting, a lot of sponsorship from folks with similar goals in mind. And so it's aligning. Now it's aligning quite well in that everybody gets it.
Yeah, that's definitely one thing that's been a real positive is that, when we're looking at people who we'd like to partner with, who kind of share the same ethos as we do, when we pitch them what we're trying to accomplish and the way that we're trying to accomplish it, it's really been accepted with open arms and really kind of almost surprisingly so for me where people are just kind of really appreciative about the extra steps that we're trying to take to make this thing earth friendly.
So with a 30K on the schedule for this fall, are you guys looking at maybe doing a longer race in the future, maybe an ultra distance?
We're certainly not opposed to it, and we certainly want to do more than just this. We also, though, recognize that we want to go kind of grow slowly. And make really smart decisions so that the direction that we go is one that's right and fits. So we're not opposed to doing a long race. We, in fact, this race in the early discussions was going to be a 50K, but we kind of tailored it back down and we've chosen a 30K. But yeah, I think there's going to be more than just the Rockin' Route, certainly. And we're not opposed to an ultra at all. But again, it won't be this year, and it may not be next year. We want the Rockin' Route to kind of be established event. We want Peak Mountain Sports to be an established and recognized name, because putting on an ultra is going to require a lot, and we recognize that. And so we don't want to do it till we're ready.
I guess as an add-on to that, what is the ultra running scene like in Knoxville? Are there other races, other ultras there kind of taking advantage of the great trails you guys have?
The predominant series here is kind of owned by the Knoxville Track Club. They have their trail series. It's called the Tread and Trodden Trail Series. And there really aren't, I think, the longest race there just occurred, and it's the Dirty Double is what they call it. It's just a marathon distance. So beyond that, I think that's the longest distance race that occurs here in Knoxville. There are, I guess, the Barkley 100. Is that Frozenhead?
Yeah, I think it might be Frozenhead.
I think it is.
It's Frozenhead. That's one I've got memorized.
Oh, yeah. So that's not too far from us. And then beyond that, you kind of have to travel a little further out toward Solly. It has a 50K that they run, the Frosty Foot, and then the stuff that's going on with Rock Creek. They're putting on 100-miler this year. But as far as Knoxville proper, not so much for ultras.
It sounds like you guys have a spot to fill there then and bring in some longer trail races in the area. So when you guys aren't planning team stuff and, dreaming up all this stuff and planning races, what are you running and what are you training for right now?
Yeah, so we're both participating in the local series for sure. In fact, I'll brag on Luke. I think he's tied for first right now in that series. And we're both looking at the, I know my big event that I'm getting kind of prepared for is the stage race in Chattanooga put on Rock Creek. It's 3 days. I think each day is about 20 miles. And they go over each of the big mountains, that's Signal Mountain, Raccoon Mountain, and Chattanooga Mountain.
Lookout
Mountain, yeah. So that's going to be my big event that I'm kind of looking at doing well in. That's in June. So 3 20-mile days back to back to back should be fun with lots of climbing. And so after that, I'm going to wait and see how quickly I recover. Certainly, I want to do a few more bigger ones towards the fall. So that's kind of where I'm at. And
yeah, it's pretty much the same for me. I kind of, that was the big event that I was really looking forward to early on this year. And I, kind of tried to rally some of the guys and girls here in Knoxville to come down and do it with me. I've got a few friends who've done it in the past and have just fantastic things to say about that race. Other than that, I may end up doing the Chattanooga Trail Marathon in a few weeks. Also planning on heading out to the Grand Canyon in the spring to potentially do some running out there, maybe try the rim-to-rim-to-rim run. Like Brad, other than that, kind of it's the stage race, and then after that, we just kind of wait and see how it goes.
With the ultra-running team you guys have, how many members do you have? And I noticed you guys posted something on Facebook recently. You've got folks racing now.
Yeah, we've got six guys, one girl. I'll try to brag on each of them. One of the guys we just mentioned, kind of the Rock Creek 100 that's occurring this year, he's going to go out. Ben King is his name. He's going to go out and do that. We may help pace him in that effort. And he was just in last weekend. He was in Virginia doing a 50K, and I don't know, I think already he's had two or three 50Ks this year. To be honest with you, it's hard for me to keep up with all the 50Ks he's running. So Ben is out running, and we've got Matt Stegall, who's kind of a local Masters runner. Last year he won the Masters Series here, 11 races, and he took the whole series for the Masters group, and Matt's super fast. Comes from a mountain biking background as well. Russell Merrick, the Hard Dog, as we like to call him, another kind of local staple. I'm not sure what big events he's going to be doing later in the year, but he was certainly at the Dirty Double this 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago now, and he's going to kind of be aiming to do some big things later. The lovely lady on our team, Elizabeth McCauley, she's got an interesting running background. She ran steeplechase for the University of Tennessee, and I think she also ran cross country. So running is in her blood. She's always done it. Shortly after graduating college, she actually turned to cycling which is where we met her. We convinced her to go back to her roots as well. She's going to be doing some of the Rock Creek stuff, so pretty excited to see how she does. She's super fast and fun to watch. Let's see, we've got Matt Dernigan. He does a lot of so he's not doing too many long, 50K or 100K or 100 miles for that matter. He certainly does a lot of the kind of the SEAL type, ultra challenge type events. Jeffrey Williams. This weekend he is racing one in, I think, Pigeon Forge, Tennessee. That's pretty much the team. So we're all, you know, although we, the Knoxville Series is our focus, so we're all pretty much at those events at every race because of different people's various recovery times or objectives and kind of what they're good at and what their niche spot is at. And we kind of, in between the Knoxville Series, go off and do our own things, or maybe just in onesie-twosies to go tackle other events.
I heard some folks doing some longer ultras or hundreds. Do you guys have hundreds on your radar in the future?
It's on my radar for sure. I'll tell you, though, the big challenge is biting off more than we can, than our bodies can handle. I think we each have pretty strong engines. You know, 16 years of racing at an elite level, you know, traveling around the country and racing, you know, some of the bigger races, we've developed pretty good capacity for pain and pretty good lung capacity, and our hearts will push us farther than structurally we're ready to go. So for me, I'm trying to take it a little bit slow. I want really bad to do a 100, but I also know that, you know, I've been putting in some fairly big miles recently, and my body is kind of fighting off injury left and right. So I've got to be careful in getting there. So I'm thinking next year is when I'll probably tackle the Rock Creek 100 is kind of on my goal for next year.
Yeah, for me, I guess, you know, initially talking, I think Brad and I had slightly different objectives for where we'd like to go, at least in the near term, you know, like 18 months to 3 year kind of picture. You know, but I think eventually I'll probably get to 100, but I, you know, in the near term, I was really, or I am really more focused on kind of, you know, getting my fitness to where I want it to be for races that are 50K and below. You know, whether or not I decide to go for a 50, you know, do a 50 miler, next year, that may end up happening, but, a 100-mile race for me is not, honestly, it's not really in my sight view at the moment.
You have to be careful never to say never to, because it's always one of those things you'll end up doing one of these days.
Absolutely. I think it's kind of it's set up in a pretty ingenious way, you know, where you just take that next step and then say, oh, well, I did that. Well, maybe I'll just go do a 50-miler. Oh, now I'll do 100K by the end of this, you know, I guess by the time you do that and you figure 100-mile or you just go do it. So yeah, I'm not saying never. Just we'll see.
That's one of the differences in ultra marathon training that you guys may not experience in cycling training, is it's not three times as much training to get to 100 miles compared to a 50K. So, you know, it's just a few more miles. It's 10 to 20 more miles on the weekend than you would normally do, and you're there. You're golden.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, weeks in this off season that I would argue that we were probably running over the winter, at least, where we were running as much as someone who was training for and or doing ultras. It's just we might have been incorporating a little bit more speed just to kind of focus on some of the shorter stuff for the interim.
And you guys mentioned the transition from biking to longer trail training. Did you find any difficulties in that transition? What is the hardest thing to grasp on the trail?
For me, I guess with a, you know, it's funny. I was trying to make this comparison the other day in terms of trail running and just the mechanics of trail running. I picked it up pretty easily. Just one, because we'd always done it in the off season. It's not like we're totally new to it. We've been trail running, 4 months out of the year for the last, you know, 8 or 9 years. At a pretty good clip, and with a mountain biking background, it's amazing how much similarities there are in mountain biking and trail running, especially around here. I mean, choosing your lines, watching, you know, where the direction you're going, a lot of the same concepts seem to carry over from each sport. So mechanically, there haven't been, for me, an issue in kind of making this plunge. Again, where the issues come for me is just piling on all of these miles on kind of a chassis, so to speak, that that hasn't had years and years of kind of abuse from a running standpoint. You know, cycling is a very non-impact sport. So when you do something like that for so long, your bones and joints aren't quite used to the abuse. And I have a friend, actually, that he put it to me best. And he's now a very elite runner, owns a great running store in Cookeville, Tennessee. And, you know, he's like a 2:24 marathoner and kind of a elite guy. And we grew up racing bikes together. And he said, Brad, you've got the engine of a Ferrari, but, you know, the chassis of a little Fiat or something. I'm not sure what he said. But so, yeah, it's just a matter of what my body's going to handle right now. So that's been the difficult part for me. I don't know about you, Luke.
Yeah, you know, kind of the same. I think athletes that put in a fair amount of time in any sport get used to training with some level of discomfort. You know, you're always kind of half dealing with this pain or, you know, joint pain or muscle pain or soreness or whatever. And I think, you know, it's just with running, it's just those issues that you tend to deal with, they're just different than they are with cycling. And certainly, I think anyway, a bit more impactful in terms of the way that they kind of force you to alter the training that you're doing. The other thing is, having run competitively before I started running, or before I started riding bikes, I was dealing with this as well. I think some people deal with it and some people don't, but for sure now, the difference between running and cycling, in terms of pre-race prep and race nutrition, or with cycling, there's just really no such thing as GI distress. You can pretty much eat a steak on a bike in the middle of a race and you'll be fine. But having to learn those ropes all over again as runners, it's been trying for sure.
Well, that brings up a good point. So, what have you done nutrition wise to adapt to that?
Well, I would say probably we haven't done too terribly much differently than we have been riding. So, most people on the bike have some type of processed suspended sugar gels or something like that. Me personally, I sweat a good bit and I can tend to be prone to cramps, especially, when it's hotter out. So I do take, electrolyte caps and things like that. But I've been trying, pretty concertedly to figure out a way that I can kind of eliminate the processed food items from my running diet in terms of what I eat while I'm running. And so that's kind of taken various forms. And I've had, different levels of success and failure with these experiments. But I think, I feel pretty good about some mixture of kind of like baked potato, sweet potato mixture with some salt in it. And I've, kind of experimenting with how to squeeze it into my mouth while I'm mid-stride, so that's kind of worked for me so far. But I'm not sure it's the end of the road for me with my experimenting, but yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
You know, you guys mentioned the rocks. What kind of shoes are you guys wearing to give yourself a little bit of padding?
Yeah, that's one thing we're always talking about. I guess that's something carried over from in the cycling world. You kind of get to be a gear dork, so to speak, and you're always talking about that stuff. So shoes have been a hot topic amongst not just Luke and I, our whole team. We always kind of talk about it when we're because we do try to run together as frequently as possible, so we're always hanging out and discussing that. And so, personally, I started out with Brooks Cascadia, and I really I liked them a lot. I still actually will go back and forth between the Brooks Cascadia, and then obviously I noticed that the last race I looked around and everybody on the start line was wearing the same pair of shoes, but the Salomon Speedcross. So I've been running in those probably primarily for the last 2 months, but occasionally I'll go back to the Cascadia. And, the Speedcross seems to do really well around here with kind of the loose rock, because there is a lot of loose rock, and for some reason that's kind of, if you're familiar with them, which I'm sure you are, you know, kind of like almost spike type on the bottom. They seem to do fairly well in the loose rock, and then the soils seem to kind of handle the roots pretty well as well. So that's loose running is something different. So
I've been primarily using a couple of different models from La Sportiva. The fit of their shoes just kind of melds well with my foot shape. And they've got, you know, I guess I started off with the original Sea Lights. And I've had a few pairs of those, and they're kind of my go-to, you know, whatever's going on kind of shoe. I've also had the Vertical K's, which I have a love-hate relationship with. They weigh maybe 6 ounces, and they have no rock plate. Right at the end of a long run, I was literally looking at my car, just kind of stepped on a rock the wrong way, and ended up breaking my foot. So that was the last run. They probably should have been put out to pasture well before that point in time, but that was the last run of those. And I have a pair of Helios as well, which are similar shoes, but they do have a bit of a rock guard in the forefoot, and they're fantastic as well.
That's a story that will make you know the importance of a rock plate here in the South. I know you can get by on the Western trails without something like that, but man, the rocks out here can really be brutal. You mentioned doing the stage race. How has your training changed in preparation for doing the 3-day mountain stage in Chattanooga?
You know, for me, I'm just coming off. I did the 3 weeks ago, the Dirty Double. So I did a marathon here locally, all trail, and it had, my Garmin said 6,000 feet. There's no way. I don't know what. And probably maybe it's 4,000 feet. A lot of climbing. So coming off that last 2 weeks, I've kind of just been taking it easy, recovering, letting my, I had a lot of deep, really rough descending, letting my knees kind of get back underneath me. And then I'm just now this week kind of started building back up the miles, building up the speed. And then ideally by the end of next month, I want to kind of not necessarily recreate the event, but I want to have three fairly hard days to kind of get me ready for it. So that's just the general, the 10,000 foot level of where I'm looking at for the stage race.
Yeah, you know, for me, kind of the same. You know, I think I'm pretty sure I'll end up doing some significantly longer runs, not necessarily in preparation for the stage race, but I know that the mileage is going to go up here in May for sure, just based on what I'm running and where I'm running. Cause I'll be heading out west as well, to get on some nice trails out there. But yeah, you know, I think, for me, just kind of continuing on progressing through the speed work that I've been doing and incorporating in some, hill work as well, because there is a fair amount of climbing that goes on down there. That's kind of, you know, what I'll be doing. I think Brad and I both talked about, you know, possibly going down there and checking out one or two of the courses out there, just kind of see what the terrain is, because I know that it is different down there. You know, it's tough running. There's no doubt about it. But from what I've heard, the terrain just kind of feels different. It's not, potentially not quite as technical all 3 days anyway. I think the second stage is supposed to be the technical one, and you know, there's some rock gardens and things like that they put you through. I think a river crossing as well down there, so that's kind of what we're doing.
And doing a stage race like that, recovery is key. Do you guys have any secret for recovery? Do you do compression? Do you do any kind of supplements?
The older I've gotten, the more I invest into recovery. And so, we'll definitely focus on that. And I never told Luke this, but at one point he said, hey, we should camp out. And I'm like, no way, I want ice baths. And I also have, I don't know if you guys have seen Sport Pump or Sport Legs, the sleeve that literally plug into the wall and have the chambers of compression. Pretty amazing things. So I'll haul that device down there with us as well. We'll plug that into the wall. And so we'll have, it's like compression socks on steroids. They come all the way up to your waist, and you put your legs in there, and they're actually a medical device. So
I've heard of some of the elite cyclists using those.
Yeah, well, I've already tried them out as now that I'm a runner, and let me tell you that they work just as well for running. They're fantastic. So that's a key part. I'm certain there'll be some ice baths involved with our race as well. And then just rest. You don't have to get up and move around, and don't keep your legs elevated and wait for the next day. I mean, recovery for me is, I think that's one thing as cyclists, you dial in pretty well. And I think that's something that we're pretty good at, is understanding how to recover and how to treat our bodies after a hard effort. So not too worried about that.
Will the acupuncturist travel with you guys, or are you going to try to take your needles with you?
You saw that, yeah. So that's something I just tried recently, and because I had a little bit of inflammation with my knees after that marathon 2 weeks ago, and it turned out there's an acupuncturist right down the road from my office, and I thought, you know, I'm going to give this a shot. And you know what, I'm buying into it. So if you know something to the latter, don't tell me, because I'm relying on the placebo effect. But it seemed to have, I mean, my knees certainly are feeling better. I've done two sessions with them. So we'll see. I may do one more session, but I'm trying to convince Luke to do it as well. It's kind of a neat experience. I was asking opinions about where to go, and someone was telling me about this nice little spa, and you know, they had all the music playing, and kind of, it seemed a little bit, I just wanted a little bit more clinical. I didn't much care for the whole experience. I just want to get poked and get the relief going and get out of there. So I found a place that worked for me. It's kind of the wham bam thank you ma'am of acupuncture, I guess.
Well, now you guys are, like we talked about with cycling is a very gear oriented sport, and running can be the same, although on maybe a cheaper scale. What other pieces of gear, other than, you know, the obvious one is shoes, what other pieces of gear do you guys rely on?
Well, I mean, I guess I need to plug we have a sponsor that it's been really good to us, and that's Orange Mud. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. They make really great hydration packs that most of us are running with. They've used the bottle kind of method, where you just have a bottle on your back and you kind of can quickly change that bottle out at a feed zone, or quickly fill that bottle up at a feed zone and keep going. So Orange Mud has been great. I got to plug them, because it was interesting when we first got this thing going. We didn't have a team. We didn't, didn't have any pictures on Facebook, and I was soliciting sponsors with nothing to really sell. And so obviously I was getting rejected a lot, but, Josh at Orange Mud, you know, the owner of Orange Mud, they were kind of growing as well. And he believed in kind of what we were doing, and immediately stepped up. And, so to me, just that relationship and him having trust in us and faith in us, it's really been important. And now, fortunately, we have that relationship with all of our sponsors, but Josh being the first at Orange Mud, that was big. So, running with Orange Mud hydration packs, certainly. Luke wears, calf sleeves sometimes. You're doing that. Let's see, what other gear are we kind of rocking out there? That's pretty much it, yeah.
I have long hair, so I usually wear a buff.
Yeah.
Just to keep the sweat out of my eyes. And, sometimes, one of the kind of buff hat visor deals that keep the sweat and sun out of my eyes, really. Other than that, it's been pretty nice to not have to have a whole bunch of different gear.
We're looking forward to hearing more about the race in September. Is it Rock and Root, or? Yes, Rock and Root.
Yeah.
I want to make sure I don't get the roots and rocks mixed up
here. It is most certainly Rock and Root.
Rock and Root, and we'll have the link to registration in our show notes, and that's coming up in September, and at a really cost effective price from what we saw.
Yeah, and I think we're constantly. Yeah, that's the other thing I encourage the listeners to look into. We're constantly running promotions. You know, right now we've got a promotion where, you know, I think it's $30 or something, but you can be entered to win some free gear. We're always doing coupons because, again, it's not. You know, we're not in it to really make money, so we're going to keep the costs low. But we are doing some unique things, such as, you know, T-shirts from recycled material for the race tees, and maybe even some stainless mugs for the finishers rather than medals. And those things cost money, so we do have to charge maybe a little bit more than we would our free series. But we're constantly running promotions for kind of the opportunity to win free stuff. And also one thing we're doing with this event, especially your listeners might want to be interested in, we're offering host housing. As poor cyclists racing around the, you know, the East Coast and the country, we really relied on host housing a lot going to races. And when directors would kind of offer that up, we would always take advantage of it. And we hadn't seen it too much in the running scene. And so that was one thing we wanted to kind of try to bring over, is just the concept of, hey, if you need a place to stay, we're going to make sure that you've got a place to stay. So we got host housing as an option for additional kind of cost savings.
That's a great idea. I mean, that just is adding to the community aspect. It's literally, you know, you're staying in someone else's house.
Exactly. And so what's going to happen is, you know, relationships going to be formed there. And the next time, you know, that particular runner who offered his home that time, you know, I guarantee the next time the person who stayed there has a race, the favor is going to be returned, and that's really what we're all about.
Yeah, or they're going to want to stay there again the next year. You know, I mean, from the cycling world, I know for Brad, it's the same. But, you know, races that you go to, you know, you travel to Chicago or California or Wisconsin, and you stay with a family one time, you know, somebody you have no idea, they've got kids and dogs and things, and it's inconvenient because you're rolling your bike into their home and they're having dinner in the middle of, you know, when you're working on your bike and things, and but you build those relationships with people who you would otherwise have no way to cross paths with, and you end up, it becomes a yearly kind of ritual. You know, when Super Week is happening up in Wisconsin, you know you're going up to stay with your home away from, you know, stay your home away from home up in Milwaukee, and you get to see, you know, their kids grow. It was something we really wanted to incorporate in terms of just bolstering the community here in the Southeast.
Yeah, that's a really great idea, and it'd be interesting to see other races kind of take that concept on.
We agree, 100%.
Well, guys, we appreciate the time, and we look forward to hearing about the race and you guys' participation in the Rock Creek Series or the Rock Creek Stage Race coming up. And love what you guys are doing and wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, and thanks for giving us the chance to talk with you.
Thanks so much.
It's an interesting concept to me. It's not, you know, a come one, come all kind of group that they're putting together. It's more focused on the racing aspect of it and a high performance aspect. But I also like that it does bring the community sense there for that, and not just races in one community, but races all over. And it sounds like they'll go do a lot of other events around the region and perhaps nationally. So we look forward to seeing great things out of their group as they get it kicked up.
Thanks for joining us for another episode. If you liked what you heard, head on over to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. While you're there, leave a comment and a rating. It will greatly help us get the word out.
And as always, we'll have links to everything we talked about in the show notes, including, at the time of recording now, there is one finisher, one potential finisher out there still on the Barkley course. So hopefully we'll get to report about a new Barkley finisher and all the other things that were mentioned in the podcast, including Peak Mountain Racing's team. And if you would like to suggest a topic or an interview subject for our podcast, send us an email at info@operationultra.com, or you can connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/operationultra, or reach out to us on Twitter at twitter.com/operationultra and use that hashtag OpUltra.
And we've had some great comments and suggestions come through there. So thanks, guys, for giving us your time. We look forward to talking to you next week.
And until then,
happy trails.
And we'll see you next time.